Thank you very much, Mary. It's a pleasure being here. And I want to thank Paul, too. It was a very good segue for my talk today. I want to talk a little bit about perceptions from the private industry standpoint. I'm a senior scientist at Valent Biosciences Corporation. We make biorational crop protection products. We make crop products for horticulturists, for farmers to use to grow horticultural crops. I've been in this industry for a long time. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm going to get right into it. I started my career in a private fruit company, and then I went on and joined a company creating ag products. I moved on to a third company, Abbott Laboratories, a huge pharma company, but they also did agricultural products. It was small and under the radar, except for the idea that horticulturists and large companies depended on these products for many years. And lastly, I work for Valent Biosciences now, which is an offshoot of Abbott Laboratories. So a lot of change in private industry, a lot of evolution in the way companies have grown and consolidated. And I want to make a real strong contrast in my talk between small-scale horticulture and large-scale horticulture. I want you to think about that from the start and think about that as I proceed. And I think that's something that I can add a few comments about that might open eyes to a few things. I do have a family legacy. My father was a professor here in Florida. I grew up in Homestead, Florida, 275 miles south of here. My brother's a professional horticulturist, both of my brothers, actually. One of them's here at the meeting. He's the director of horticulture at Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden. And so it's been a long road in horticulture for me and my family. We talk about plant blindness. I don't understand plant blindness. How could you be blind to that? You know, that's a picture of the tropical fruits that the company I started with grows for a living. And so who could possibly be blind to such a display? But I believe that people are, you know. I thought plant blindness is when my loropetalum shrub stabs me in the eye when I'm doing pruning, but I understand now that it's something different. Public perceptions. We all know about these three. These are the easy ones. Food's everywhere. It's cheap. It's not something we need to think about. Horticulture. What is horticulture, you know? Milk comes from the grocery store. Remember that famous study, right? Well, it's the same with fruits and vegetables, I'm sure. But now I want to talk about perceptions of younger Americans. Here's a point I really want to hammer home. Large agriculture or horticulture companies are bad actors. We're uncaring. We're willing to do harm in order to make profit. Corporate farms. Do you agree? I think this is true. I think, unfortunately, it's quite true. And I think it's little wonder that many students would consider going to work for a large hort company as a sellout, you know? And yet, and this is the part that mystifies me, small farmers are heroes. They're environmental stewards, you know? They're going out and growing those great crops, and the large companies are destroyers of the environment. And I think that's the main thing that large horticulture companies have to work on. We know about food security. We know that we're going to have a hard time feeding all the billions of people in the world. And so we all need to work together to show that horticulture creates food for everyone in the world to eat. We do it in a sustainable way as best we can. I think that growers are looking for sustainable, green ways to produce fruits and vegetables, and we need to help them as all of us, as educators, as scientists, as growers, and we all need to do a better job teaching the public that you can't just have the tiniest farms, you can't just have a rooftop garden. And I think in our videos, for the fine videos we're showing, we need to show some large-scale horticulture too and show the steps that are being made to make it as sustainable as humanly possible on a global basis, not just in the United States, but that is the focus of my talk. Negative perceptions, you know, I could go on ad nauseum, polluting the environment, poor treatment of low-paid workers. And I'm not saying that these things haven't been true, but obviously they're not all true, right? Bee poisoning from pesticides, demonstrations against GMO or GEO foods. And then last, Paul talked about social media. What's being done on social media to combat the idea that, oh my gosh, don't eat peaches because peaches are so bad because of the pesticides on peaches? Well, you know, let's talk about both sides of the equation and as far as that goes. And I don't want to give people the wrong idea. I'm something of an environmentalist. Sometimes in my company I have to bite my tongue a little bit. But, you know, we all need to work together on these ideas. Thankfully, this is my other side of the coin slide. I think we can ride the wave of a growing interest in sustainable food production. We need to emphasize the strides that the scientific community is making to give better ways to produce crops in a sustainable way. Educate and hire younger people. Mary asked me to give a little bit of information about industry positions. I'm going to do that in a minute. But my company, for example, needs a succession plan. Most all of the scientists in our company are in their 40s and 50s and 60s. And so there's a real lack of young people coming in. Part of it's our fault. We demand a whole lot of experience, and experience is hard to come by. So there's some things that we need to do to balance this out and make some compromises. I think we can all do a better job showing the public how horticulture truly benefits society in all kinds of ways. Ornamental horticulture to production of fruits and vegetables, everything in between. We've talked a lot about this part today, so I'm going to gloss over this. I do my career day every year in my local middle school. My wife is a guidance counselor, and she has way too many students that she needs to work with. I mean, that's certainly true. What about company tours? And, you know, we know about internships, workshops. I'm suggesting adopt a science teacher program where a guy like me adopts a local science teacher, gives them lesson plans, but then pays for it. Gives them a little kit that does some hands-on stuff for students. But my goodness, don't ask them to pay for it, because we know how things go that way. You're in Orange County, Florida. This is the fourth largest public school district in the United States of America. So there's a big public school district right here that needs all the help it can get, training science to young people, showing them where food comes from, giving them an interest in horticulture. I think we can be much more willing to hire young people in private horticultural companies. I'm speaking from the perspective of a scientific company, particularly the company like mine that's making new products. We want experienced people to come in ready to hit the ground running. And then lastly, you can see, I think we're all on the same page, focus more on long-term goals and less on the short-term, putting out the fires in our companies. We need to worry more about the future and where talented people are going to come from. Okay, here's just a few examples I took off the web. This is Bayer. This is one of the big horticulture companies in the world. And their bee care program, because this is a hot topic, right? This is a hot button issue across our United States, is how are bees going to make it? Now they talk about your morning cup of coffee and chips and guacamole, and do you recognize how important bees are? Well, I say, do all of this and do about a million things more and really help with public perceptions. And don't try to just put out fires, because the public and social media is knocking us over the head about bee safety and bee health, and deservedly so, I certainly want to say. Now, these are off the company website from Valent Biosciences. And look at the buzzwords. Preserving pollen, buzzwords, get it? Yeah, that one. Preserving pollinators and predators. And then at the bottom, worker environmental safety. But this is not really geared toward the public. There's terms like REI and PHI and down embedded in that little text. And that's not really for the public to understand and grab hold of. This is more for professionals who we want to buy our products. But they're a good message, and they're beautiful, and they could be turned into lesson plans relatively simply. Just take out all the company stuff, make it generic, and make it work for the whole industry. I have two more, and these are the type of terms we need. Specificity, where we target specific insects, not all of them, and we work in a sustainable way. When you need to protect a forest from gypsy moth, they use our company's products to kill gypsy moths in forests in a very sustainable way. So I think there's a lot that can be done to promote the sustainable message for horticulture across our country and the world. Here's where I talk about a position with a science company in the industry in horticulture. I make a contrast here. If you want to find out about what it takes in the new job with NC State to be a horticulture professor, you can look it up online. You can see what that position is going to be like. You can do quite a bit of R&D and look into it. Not so easy with a position with a private company. So I'm trying to influence people and tell them, go look for a position. And when you go, be serious about finding out about it. Industry positions are not always so well defined. Excuse me for the crazy typo there in parentheses where it says fixed. That was a buddy of mine reviewing my presentation, and I didn't catch that to pull it out. One of my coworkers, right? So anyway, Positions in private industry can change abruptly. I'm a whole tree plant physiologist. I specialize in fruit trees, but I've worked on ornamentals. I work on vegetable crops. I work on the projects that my company requires me to, and fortunately, I find them all stimulating, so it's all good for me, but things can change over time. But my last point is there, these changes can be devastating to some people, but in other ways, they can really make for a well-rounded career. And if you work smart with your company, I think you can make a career that evolves along with the company as needs change on both sides. And so I don't think anybody should be scared or worried about getting a position with a private company and it lasting for a long time. I've currently been with my company for 19 years, and I don't plan on going anywhere. So I think longevity is something that you can look forward to with industry, just like with an academic position. Other things that it might take to secure a position with the private industry. Loyalty. I'm not sure that this is something that people understand so much. Private companies value loyalty, and that cannot be overstated. A lot is invested in a position in a private industry job. And as well, a lot of intellectual property is shared with employees from the day you start. And so they don't want someone to come in for a year or two and then jump ship and use it as a stepping stone. That's a very unpopular concept in the private industry. Very different things about job interviews. The old deal of come prepared, ask questions, but really, ask all the questions you can possibly ask because you probably won't get another chance. And I also tell people, younger people, be ready to say yes. Or if you're not ready today to say yes, say, look, all I need is a day or two to figure this out and sleep on it, and then I'm ready to say yes or no. Because that's the kind of demands that a private company can make. We're going to offer, but this is a relatively short-term offer. So a few things for the job seeker to keep in mind when they're looking at a position in the private industry. I want to check my notes. There's no substitute for experience. But think about experience in as creative a way as you can. The bottom slides there shows me and my brother in Ecuador in the 1980s with the Gator Citrus Club. We got to go to 5 different countries by joining a club, going out and being involved, you know. And then when I joined the fruit company, I could tell the owner, oh, yeah, I've been to Peru. Oh, yeah, I've been to Costa Rica. I mean, that really helped. I mean, it helped a great deal. He had faith that I could go there and get back home and do my job while I was there, you know. And so, since most people lack experience, talk up the experience you've had, but you have to know enough to go and get it while you're still at university, before you get out and you start seeking that job. So, I think that's a real important thing to think about as well. 62% of the people they polled didn't know what the word horticulture is. Should we use plant scientists? I would not be hung up on that. I mean, I'm sure there'd be a lot of passion about such a discussion, but we need to be relevant and we need to be understood and recognized. So the choice of words maybe is a really big deal. Scholastic, they mentioned in the slide from about Clifford the Big Red Dog. He was such a famous character from Scholastic. Well, I'll bet Clifford likes avocados. I know that my greyhounds do, you know, so tie it all together, right? I mean, use the tools we have and let's expand on such things. I have one more slide talking about, once again, these public perceptions. I think the time is right. I think Americans are ready to get reacquainted with the land and reacquainted with the food we eat, fruits and vegetables. We're scared about some things. We're excited about other things. Let's ride the wave of organic. You know, only 1%, 4% of horticulture is organic production. Well, that's going to go up, and people pay good money for those products, both the ag products, the use on them, the safer products, and also the crops that we're eating. So let's ride that wave. Public perceptions of horticulture, they can be improved very successfully. Let's use social media. Let's adopt teachers. Let's go out and work with public educators. I mentioned my talk to somebody who's a good friend of mine, and he said, yeah, also, don't forget about the older people. The older people who are master gardeners who want to learn and want to be active when they're retired and have them mentor the younger people. And I thought that was really smart and something I hadn't thought of. Programs focused on young people in primary schools and colleges and then, and older people as well, because I think all of that combined can really get us to the end goal that we're all seeking. And so that's it for me, and I appreciate your attention.
very much, Craig. So I'd like to ask the three other speakers to come up here and sit so you can face the audience. Thank you, folks, for listening so attentively. So now it's a chance to hear from you, to hear your comments, suggestions, your thoughts. Any questions for individual speakers or folks as a group? They don't have to be questions. You can give comments or talk about who your plant mentor was or your plant blindness story or whatever. So the floor is open. Yes. Great. Thanks for your comments. Yes. Okay. It's Fred, right? Horticulture. Thank you, Fred. Thanks for your passion. Yes. Terry, in the back. Cool. Okay, right here in the center. Thomas. I just realized we're recording this, so unfortunately all the voices in the audience are not being heard, but the answers will be. So this is a question about the discrepancy with the salary for undergraduates in horticulture, not attracting young people.
That's a big issue, and I think it's an issue in a lot of areas of the country that is changing, although I have heard from some of the faculty in some areas of the country saying, no, it's still a very big issue. Our university does a senior exit survey where they record the salaries of the positions that they've accepted. And for the most part, they're not too bad. And I think they've been steadily going up. One of the things that, you know, but there's lots of caveats on this. A lot of folks like Raleigh, and so they come to Raleigh, they go to school there, and they want to stay there, where they could get a much higher salary if they went, if they were willing to, you know, go to another state or at least go to another city within North Carolina. I got an email earlier this year from a student, a high school student, and the email said, I like plants, I want to go into horticulture, my mom and dad don't want me to go. What can I tell them? And so what I've been doing is, as I've been getting in the job requests, I've been emailing them to him. So he's been able to see, you know, there's been a number of them. There are, and the salaries, now granted, some of them require some experience, but if you do a lot of internships, then students can get that experience while they're going to school. You know, the salaries have been ranging every from 35 up to around 75,000. And so I've not heard yet if he is going to go, because he is just a junior, but hopefully that gives you some idea.
Thomas, I would agree that in the industry there are too many lower-paying horticulture jobs, and I think that's why U.S. News and World Report identifies horticulture as one of the not-so-good careers to go into, right? And so my perspective is a little different because I work for a science company, and we tend to hire folks with master's degrees and PhDs, and they're paid in line with other scientists in the industry, which is pretty decent pay, and yet we have a whole range of other people who work in our company who make a good living. And in terms of farm workers or people who are production managers for a citrus company here in Florida or work for a large nursery, I think you're just going to have to get in an entry-level position and work your way up as best you can. But I don't think that's any different than many other careers out there. We happen to be in Orlando, which is a very unique place for low-paying service-type jobs, right? And we have a lot of such jobs in the lawn care industry here, and that's a form of horticulture. So I think it runs the gamut, and we all should work on increasing the identity and the overall valuation of these jobs in horticulture, right? Give it a better perception. Show people how important horticulture is. And I think all of these things can help drive up salaries for workers. I mean, it's going to be very soon in Florida, if not already, you need a license to apply fertilizer if you're a lawn care professional. And so, you know, as the requirements go up and the educational requirements go up, so too should the pay, in my opinion. And I think that will certainly happen.
Other comments, questions? Yes, Ian.
Well, I congratulate the speakers today for addressing a very, very important topic, not just Americans are facing, but everybody around the world is facing. With my exception, and that might be countries in Asia, the rest of us are seeing the same pressure on black graduates, the same lack of understanding of horticulture, just the general confusion about where food comes from, what it takes to get to the plate, locally or imported, and so on. But I also congratulate the American Society of Horticultural Science for taking on this initiative, which is bold, and I agree with you, will take some time to get to a reasonable level of solution. If I could just follow my International Society of Horticultural hat for a moment, ISHS has been in the same space for the same period of time that you folks have been. And one of the things that we worked on was with this publication called Harvesting the Sun, which is an attempt to tell the general population about horticulture. And I think we've been reasonably successful about that. The book's now been translated into at least five other languages, so it's getting international attention. But whether it's promoting careers, whether it's telling people about horticulture, whether it's putting out the good news stories, and guess my message is that we can't do this alone. And I offer the partnership, the collaboration of the International Society for Cultural Science with AXHS in this venture, however that might turn out. Thank you very much.
Again, see you in Brisbane.
See you in Brisbane. Thank you, Ian, for that offer. Yes, ISHS, I remember when Harvest the Sun came out. But it 2 years ago? Is that how old the publication is? Yes, it's wonderful that it's been translated in other languages. Other comments or suggestions? Yes. Other thoughts or comments? So Terry's idea about all of our graduates becoming certified professional horticulturists. Is anybody doing this? Is anybody at an academic level asking their students to become, is River Falls? Okay, so what's the financial cost to a student? It's not very much, right? Is it $50 or some? About $50 for them to do that. Haven't had any pushback? No. Right. That's right. That's one way to go about it. Wait till the exam comes. So, is that something ASHS should do? Should ASHS ask for certification of our academic students? Have we not pushed enough on the professionalism of our field so that having the certified horticulture, certified professional horticulture, CPH, behind the initials as well as a BS, will that make a difference to the public? We know the perception of our field is an issue with the public. Will that make a difference? I don't know.
Certification or anything like that. So where we really need to go, if we're going to pursue that side of the equation, is after legislating and controlling
regulation, right?
To apply fertilizer, you get a practice law. Mm-hmm. That's why those certification programs have been successful. I'm not sure people will invest the time and effort to get certification and retain it unless it is in a competitive advantage.
Terry. Right. Yes. Oh, are you?
Thank you. lot of other people have already said, but I work with Tom Canto, and I know that my personal experience was that I was so idealistic when I got into graduate school, and I knew that I loved plant science. And I got in and I studied it, but I didn't have a vision of what type of a career I was after that. I had in my mind that I wanted to do conservation, or that I wanted to do something with a bigger, with a value to it that was bigger than just, you know, the whole idea of, you know, you don't see the world, you do all that when you're
a student,
in school, a student. And I think that that's a big opportunity that we have. A lot of young people really have that idealism in their mind from the going into school. And I think that your point about not knowing what a degree in industry would look like is very true, because you can go into industry and you can literally take your career in any number of directions based on what your interest and your passion is. And I think that industry is probably not a big enough part of what we're doing here, of what you're discussing, because that is where you can go in and you can tell, you know, you can tell these kids that there's the possibility of making a big impact worldwide, globally, not just, you know, their local, they're not just necessarily just growing something at the local level. They can make a big impact, they can make some money doing it, they can have that professional position if that's what they're looking for. And I think that if, you know, you join what the universities are doing and get a stronger input from the university, I think that would help to sell a more full picture of what you can actually do with a degree. Whether it's called horticulture or whether it's called plant science, personally I like plant science because I think it gives that perception. It renames it maybe in a way that the students now might be more likely to do, but
I want to comment on Terry's point real quick. In terms of tenure promotion, you know, articles that go to popular press, they go in the same categories as trade journal articles, so they do count. But what I've noticed is we really do a lousy job of telling people outside of our peers what it is we do and why we do it. We have a second campus at NC State. It's near Charlotte, and it houses the Plants for Human Health Institute. And one of the staff people there is working, likes to write, puts out press releases. And so there's three faculty there, and they generate as much publicity with those three faculty, and probably more so than the main campus faculty, where we've got, you know, 30-some faculty. And it's because they do it. You put out news releases. Unfortunately, journalism, like a lot of careers, it's gotten very cost-effective. So if a well-written news release is released, and a reporter will take it, do a little bit of editing on it, and the next thing you know, it shows up on the web under Google News, and, you know, it's spread far and wide. So I agree completely. We need to do so much better on that. And the tools are there. We're just not doing it.
Yes.
We have had an initiative working with headquarters staff to pull journal articles, select journal articles, make press releases out of them. I just wish that people would read the articles and spread the word, because we published the Eureka Alert, and Eureka Alert has a worldwide distribution network. I get comments back from authors who are so very implemented for them, and so we already have that process.
Been a cool effort, Tim.
Cool. Other thoughts or comments? Thank you for your attention today. We'll continue to talk about the promotion, and you'll continue to hear about it. Pick up one of the cards, put your input in on the survey online, have a conversation with the Fleischmann-Hillard folks, and we'll all continue to work to promote horticulture. Thank you.